Yeah, I'm a little fucking mental, but I'm ready to destroy motherfuckers. Y'all weren't talking shit about Mike Tyson when he was like this. Y'all respect him now, right? Okay then, so you gonna respect me? I seen some shit I should have never seen, but I'm a killer now.
Painty pack, nigga. Painty pack, nigga.
Hey, and welcome back to the number one podcast in the sport where King Ryan Garcia managed to swerve the whole boxing world, and I mean the whole boxing world. I can't even say I was immune from it. I kind of wavered a bit, but he showed that he might be something special. Let's be honest. And I mean, like, as an all-rounder, he showed he might be something special. We await with interest what his next trick will be, but he can't play this one again for sure because no one's going to fall for it. But before we talk about the actual fight itself, let's just talk about the result. Yeah, because there are a lot of people online, and I know what happens when you watch a fight and you get emotionally attached to the fighter, the moment, the situation, the energy. And it's very, very easy to have your mind swayed and shout out things like robbery, or, you know, those scorecards were poor, or, you know, the judging was this. However, if we're being honest, and we should be, we can look at that fight objectively, and we can say Ryan Garcia had three rounds where he scored a knockdown, round 7, round 10, round 11. So we're going to give those rounds to him. There's no debate about that, okay? So for Ryan Garcia to win the fight, I need find only two other rounds in that fight. And I know people give an argument, but yeah, but the DAZN guy scored one of the rounds 9-8. That was poor scorecarding. Like, if you get dropped the way Haney was getting dropped, you win the round. Because there's nothing Haney can do in return that gives him control of that round. He got dropped heavily three times. So now I've got three knockdown rounds. I need to find only two rounds. We can all agree round number one belongs to Ryan Garcia. Now I've got to find one more round out of eight for Ryan Garcia. And it can be round 3, it can be round 6. The choice is yours. Could be both. In some cases, some judges had both for him. But you pick one more of those, you give Ryan Garcia 5 rounds, Devin Haney 7. Now you start to take the points away for the knockdown. Very hard to give Haney a score higher than 112. Very hard to give Ryan Garcia a score lower than 113. So mathematically and logically, there's probably no way Haney could have won on those scorecards based on what was visible with our own eyes on the broadcast. So anyone that says it was a robbery, as Roy Keane would say, you're living in cuckoo land. It wasn't. But here's what it was. It was another fight that elevates boxing. It was another time the Americans have delivered moments greater than the Saudis can. And we're seeing this kind of schism where, much like WWE versus WCW / the NWA back in the days, the Saudis are kind of going with that freak factor, just get all these superstars together and hope for the best, right? And you're seeing the Americans go, we can't match that money, but what we can do in the smaller weight classes is start to deliver fights that capture the hearts of the public. Deliver fights that bring people's soul back. Garcia against Haney, Haney Garcia, whichever way you want to call it, was a fight that made us fall in love with the sport again. It reminded us about why the sport was special and is special. It was everything you would want in a top tier fight. So let's break this down. You've got two guys who fought 6 times in the amateurs. When you fight someone 6 times in the amateurs, and, you know, these guys are no mugs, they're probably tournament fights. They're fights that will force something. And because they're roughly the same age, they've just come up together. They are the rivals. They are the Oscar De La Hoya and Shane Mosley of their time. Just guys in the same area who are rivals. They are the Roy Jones Jr. and Antonio Tarver of their time. And people don't understand that even with Jones and Tarver, that rivalry is from childhood. They have grown up together, traveling to shows together, seeing each other, knowing that I'm going to meet you in the final of that tournament, or I'm going to meet you in the final of that tournament. You know what I mean? I'm going to see you soon. So they know each other. They are rivals. And how do you typify it? And when I think about those two, I think about a rivalry that I haven't mentioned, but should be mentioned. And it's George Groves versus James DeGale. And the reason I say that is, if you remember what the George and James rivalry was really about, it was this. George wanted James to respect him. George wanted James to be in public and say, listen, if I'm not the man right now, then that guy George Groves is, because nobody has pushed me harder in training. No one has pushed me harder in sparring. He can go all the way. I think I'm the best, but if I'm not, it's George. That's probably all George ever wanted from that rivalry. But he never got it because James would never give it to him. And so George's attitude was, I'm going to take it. And that's what happened. Fought in the Amps, George won. And you know my views on this. I don't believe clubmates should ever have to box each other. I just don't. It makes the gym very toxic, and your gym doesn't recover from that because people feel like they have to pick sides, and it's not great. But then they fought in the pros, and George won. And people will say, I don't think he won, in my opinion. I don't care about your opinion, be honest. The scorecards were the scorecards. But with that rivalry, it was that need for someone to acknowledge. And you had one guy who went off and had everything given to him, right? And Devin did. He had the Mayweather rub. He was doing this. He had the internet eating out the palm of his hand. He was the guy. Devin Haney has been that guy since he was 16. The hardcores have been banging this Haney drum since he was 16. Ryan Garcia has kind of gone here, there, and everywhere. But through dedication and the grace of God, he's ended up here. He ended up right here. Back where it all began for those guys as teenagers, talking about what they would do when they were world champions. And I wonder what those conversations went like. Were they always talking about, you know what, we're going to fight each other as champions. We're going to unify, we're going to be undisputed and make lots of money together. Or was it just, we don't like each other? I don't know. But the thing about those rivalries, and we saw it with Groves and DeGale. We saw it with Mosley and De La Hoya. Did we? I think we did. We saw it with Tarver and Jones. And Tarver and Jones, in terms of an about turn, is probably as incredible as they come. The guy that was overlooked growing up always finds a way. Why? Because nobody knows Devin Haney like Ryan Garcia does. Nobody knew James DeGale like George Groves did. Nobody knew Roy Jones Jr. like Antonio Tarver did. And no one knew Oscar De La Hoya like Shane Mosley did. Nobody. And I can't put a finger on what it is psychologically, but if you look at all of those rivalries, the defeat normally comes to the point where you think the guy can't be beaten. So Roy fought Antonio Tarver, I think, having come down from winning the heavyweight belt. Oscar was on top of the world when Shane fought him and Shane beat him. DeGale was flying when George came out of nowhere to fight for that British title. And when you look at that history of it, it's always been the underdog that sprung the surprise. And why? Because you almost ignored the underdog. The underdog's whole aim is to look at you and say, I need to get you back. While Devin, Roy, DeGale, De La Hoya, they're looking elsewhere. They've almost forgotten that you exist. And that's not to be disrespectful, but they can forget that you exist. And so in this fight, you had that. You had two kids who Ryan had started off being the guy. Then it was Devin. And then by that point, everyone wants Devin Haney. He's in camps with people. He's with Floyd. He's getting that rub. he's having his career and Ryan's going his own path. And, you know, Ryan's done what he's done. He's clowned around on social media. He's built a profile. He's lived his life, we could say. Devin's been monastic and done all of that. Ryan's really lived his life. A lot of it we've got to see up close and personal. So when you get a fight like this, it's not based on fundamentals and it's not based on boxing analysis because that's such a small fraction of it. It's based on two people who know each other. Two people who can't surprise each other. There's not much Ryan's going to do that Devin hasn't seen numerous times before and vice versa. So how do you prepare for that? All you can do is be the best version of you and see what happens. And that's what I think both men attempted to do. It wouldn't be right to talk about this fight if we don't talk about the build-up, because that's kind of where I think the boxing public were thrown. I don't know who crafted this plan. I don't know if it was Ryan. I don't know if it was Golden Boy. I don't know if it was DAZN. But to have Ryan Garcia pull out the whole Brian Pillman shtick of is he mad, is he not mad, was, with hindsight, genius. With foresight, you worried because it had so much potential to go wrong. And we got everything, right? We got the Bilderbergs, we got child exploitation, child sex trafficking, the elites are all at it. But I don't think he mentioned any names, which is what's probably going to keep him alive. He just kind of floated at it and said, look, they're going to get Diddy anyway, so let me just talk my talk. And so there was a lot of that. Just all those sorts of incidents, just jumping on spaces, revealing insider secrets about Spence and stuff. There was so much that we were watching and going, because we're not conditioned to it, because we're so conditioned to the media trained, say nothing risky, we're not used to it. But you could see that Garcia was just trying to get under Haney's skin. He was just trying to throw him off. And you could see it was Haney had this battle where he wanted to react, but then, you know, he's been told by his team, don't react. But those two know each other so well. Ryan knows how to get to Devin. Do you know what I mean? He must do. Like, they grew up together. Like, you know what I mean? There are no secrets between those two. And Ryan persisted with this, just this getting under Devin's skin, weighed in, but came to the fight week presser, the face-off, topless, wearing the backpack. He did all of that. And then you saw Devin snap. That shove was him snapping and him going, right, this is personal now. And at that point, I think Ryan was like, yep, got him. Saturday night, he's going to give me exactly what I want. There was that point where he was saying to Devin, do you really want to meet me in the middle of the ring? And that must point back to them as kids. By doing that, you're tapping into the inner child. And I've said this numerous times, and I'm going to say it again. Adulthood is simply the process and the duty we have to protect our inner child. That is all adulthood is. If you know how someone was as a kid, it won't take you but 5 minutes to reveal that in them now. How many times you've seen these guys and they start lifting weights and taking nandrolone and trenbolone and they get big and they get the neck tattoos and they get all this stuff. And when you look at it, it's just a suit of armor to protect the inner child. And if you're brave enough to press them, the truth comes out. A lot of adults, men and women, are hiding their childhood trauma behind that kind of bombastic, tough guy exterior. Just be brave enough to outlast the storm and you'll see. They'll just revert to being an 8-year-old again. But that's what adulthood is. And Devin Haney broke the golden rule of life. And I use this when I talk to my teams. You know, I'm a passionate believer in this expression. Never let your emotions override your discipline. Emotions are great. Emotions make you do incredible things. Emotions can take you to the top of the world. The point that they override your discipline is the point where you're done. And Devin allowed his emotions to override his discipline. That's what he did. He did, and so he couldn't possibly be in the same space he was when he fought Loma. He couldn't be in the same space that he was when he fought Kambosos because Ryan Garcia didn't let him. You know, he couldn't be the Devin Haney we've seen numerous times. Ryan Garcia didn't let him. And Ryan was never going to let him do that in a fight because he's like, I've seen this all before. this isn't new to me. So just before we talk about the fight itself, one thing I do want to say is, how good did it feel to see boxing at the Barclays Center again? Big time boxing in America with a fervent crowd, all that sort of stuff that we haven't really had with the Saudi fights. And we can talk as much as we want, and you know, the normal jockeys and clowns, and you know, the normal people who tub thump about Saudi because they're paid to do so, they'll try and convince you that it's a great place to watch boxing. But that Barclays Center is a great place to watch boxing. There's no debate around that. And it was the perfect setting for a fight that deserved a stage that big. And let's hope that those types of fights don't end up in Saudi, because you need that public energy. And you feed off it. You buy into it. And that's exactly what you need. And, you know, yeah. Good to see big time boxing back in America. Meaningful fights in a meaningful venue. So I'm trying to think here. If you really look at that fight, now normally I'd try and say, look, on the tactics board, here's what you'd write. Those two guys, you almost just wheel them out and go, don't make any mistakes. That's it. Don't make any mistakes. You already know him. He knows you. Don't make any mistakes. And you'll be fine. Devin Haney, first round, makes a mistake. Overreaches with the jab. Garcia times it. How the hell he's done that, I don't know. That is the holy grail, to be able to feint someone and catch him with a left hook on the point of the chin and have them wobbled in round one. In round one. And I don't believe Haney gives that opportunity to anybody else. And even if he did, I don't think anyone could have capitalized it the same way Ryan Garcia did. And this is what I mean about when you've grown up together. There's almost like a spiritual bond that says, we're going to give each other what we want. And then we're just going to go from there. So the question becomes, did Devin Haney ever recover from that? Psychologically, physically, it didn't look like he did. Because I'm trying to think, in his pro career, has he been in that position before where he's been properly rocked? Not, you know, he took a heavy shot. Rocked. Because how many rounds after that did Devin Haney have to jab and hold, till he could get his legs and his mind right? And the referee was very lenient on him. Very, very, very lenient. There should have been at least a warning by round four, maybe two warnings by round five for that holding. I thought the ref could have policed that better. I'm not going to say he had a bad night, because I think it's hard to be a referee and it's hard to please everybody. But the first round was hard on Haney, because those sorts of shots take years of your career. And what Ryan Garcia did in that first round is reveal to every Haney fan, the boxer you think you're supporting, the boxer you think you're cheering on, the boxer you think is this amazing fighter, I want to reveal to you who he really is. A guy that can't take power and can't match my speed. And I thought Garcia had the speed advantage. Did he have the work rate advantage? No. But Ryan never has. And I don't know if that's a trend born of reality or trend born of laziness, but he's never been the most active guy. He's always waited to get someone going, and then he sort of jumps on them. A lot like Teo. I think Ryan Garcia and Teofimo Lopez have a lot in common like that, where they don't come alive until they've got you hurt. Like, there's a lot of kind of dancing around, larking around, and there's not that hunger and intensity you see in other guys. And you saw that in the fight, actually. So look, end of round one, you got Bill Haney going, oh God, this isn't good. And you know, he's basically trying to reset his son and go, look, go back to what we were doing. But he can't now. And I think Bill knew at that point, this is going to be a rough night. I watched that first round, it's going to be a rough night. And credit to Devin for boxing his way back. And I think Ryan helped him by not having the work rate and the conditioning. And he said that in his own interviews that he should have had, because maybe that fight wouldn't have gone the 12. And maybe it won't go the 12 if they rematch. But credit to Devin for boxing his way back in. I'm not a fan of the jab hold, but he did what he had to do. And I think when you get to the middle rounds, But just as you're cresting into the middle rounds, he started to get a foothold in the fight, and the fight's competitive. He's winning a few rounds, and you're like, perfect. And then round seven happened. That left hook, bam, came again. At the point where Devin was switching off and going, ah, I've got this fight now. I've got him under control. Switched off again. Bang, another heavy shot. Tried to hold on, couldn't, had to go down. And then after that, he shipped a few. And then that became the tone of the fight. It was just a question of, will Ryan land one of those again? Even when he wasn't dropping Devin Haney, Haney was taking heavy shots. Hard, hard shots. And for a guy with a jaw as big as Devin Haney's, like, it was quite a surprise that he was going down that easily. Now, let's be honest. When you look at Devin Haney's jaw, you kind of, in your head, you're like, ah, come on, man, you've got to have a chin. If you got all that mass around there, I mean, you got the quagmire chin, you must be able to take a shot. And the fact that he didn't would have alarmed him. That being dropped that way, and he would have been like, as Garcia kid can do this anytime, because he'd been taking those shots. And then he got dropped again in the 10th. You know, bit messy, but another shot that Garcia got on the point of the chin. How many people can do that? Like, Haney's been in with guys who can really box, like Lomachenko. They haven't found the point of the chin that way. I'm trying to remember, has he been in with Linares as well? And he hasn't been able to find the point of the chin. A lot of guys did not find the point of that chin. Garcia did. Why? Familiarity. Muscle memory. He knows where he needs to be to hit Devin Haney. Not much can change from when you're kids till you're adults. You box how you box. And then the round 11, I would have been perfectly okay with him stopping the fight in round 11, because Haney took an absolute beating. And I'm going to hear people in the comments say to me, ah, you know, but he outboxed Garcia. The punches he was taking, they're not great shots to take, because you've got to muster something deep inside yourself to resist them, to come back from them. And that thing takes years to replenish. You don't just replenish that in a fight camp. And that's your fight, essentially. Your fight is essentially one round where Haney gets hurt, three rounds where Haney gets dropped, and then the kind of rest of it where it's a bit nip and tuck. But every minute of that fight was compelling, because now you're there just thinking, Ryan's just got to clip him again. And so it's, can Devin avoid that and do his thing, or can Ryan do his thing and catch him? And that whole cat and mouse thing is what we wanted. And the thing is, it gave the evolutionary ascendancy to Ryan. Ryan became the predator in there, and Devin was the prey. And that's not how people thought the fight would go. So can I just be real for a second? In any circumstance, if you're a pound-for-pound guy and you get dropped heavily three times and then get hurt badly in that first round, do you really deserve to win anyway? Do you know what I mean? Like just the optics of it. Do you really deserve to win? Like, you'd be winning on, like, the weakest of technicalities. So I'm in that camp of, I'm happy that the fight went the way it did. I think it's good for boxing. Whether Garcia's loopy or not, can't say. Time will tell. But we need to get back to a point where we've got characters in boxing. Think how many times we got bored of Joshua being that media-trained guy. Think how many times we get bored of, yeah, I'm just going to go and talk to my team. We're going to take each fight as it comes. Think how many times we got bored of that. And then you got a kid in Ryan Garcia who doesn't give you that. He gives you entertainment. And you still have people in boxing complaining. We're just determined to moan. And this is why I say, like, the boxing fan base is probably more effeminate than women's soccer. Women's football, I should say. I said soccer, sorry. I think it is more effeminate than women's football. You know, just from the reaction of fans, that people are just never happy. I am happy that we had a big fight in America, two guys in the prime of their lives who have a rivalry, and they fought, and people hit the canvas, and people had to come off the canvas and show character and show grit. Two warriors prove themselves, and we move on. What more do you want? Like, I'm tired of people wanting their guy to win. Oh, I want my guy to win, and when he doesn't, it's a robbery. Oh, for God's sake, stop. We had a great night of boxing. You know, and, you know, for the British fans, I mean, you also had the Sam Noakes night as well, which wasn't as entertaining, but was equally as inspiring too, to see Sam Noakes win that EBU title. And, you know, I think it's iBoxium's first European title. So congratulations to them. You know, I'm always happy for Eddie Lamb. Like, people just think I'm bigging up my mate when I talk about Eddie Lamb, but I'm not. I'm talking about a coach I genuinely respect, because I've never been a guy where there's not a bad word to say about me. Never been that guy. And the fact that there's not a bad word to say in boxing about Ed says it all. I think he's been jobbed. I think managers and pseudo-advisors have gone in and whispered in people's ear, often to their massive disadvantage. You know, that's happened a lot. And I just wish him all the best. I just had to give that little sidebar because it popped into my mind. I'm doing a Ryan Garcia now. So let's get back to Ryan. So now Ryan wins. He doesn't win the world title because he didn't make weight. And we do need to touch on that, I think, because I'm a big advocate of when you're a pro boxer, your job is to make weight. Now, I know the guy that did Ryan's S&C, did Ryan's diet, did his kind of weight-making plan, we'll call it. They had no intention of coming in at 140 from what I heard. But Ryan said it himself. He said, I can't do 140. Physically, I can't do it because I couldn't fight against Tank at 140. And they had me drained with the rehydration and all of that. So what made people think Ryan was going to come in? As soon as he found a price for his, for the additional pounds and kilos, what made you think he's going to come in? When I saw him shirtless, and I was like, he looks like you should do if you train a bit and you're in reasonable shape. He's not ripped to the bone like he's trying to make extreme weight. I was like, he ain't even trying. Now, the extra 3.2 pounds, is that what was that? Was that the difference in the fight? The answer is we don't know. Okay? We don't know, because let's just say he walked in fight night at 160 pounds. Could he have got to 160 pounds having cut down to 140? Absolutely. He's got the team around him who can do that. Easy. Could he have cut down to 140 for the belt? Yes, could have done that easy. He's got the right team around him to do that. They've done it many times before. The question was, can they get him in the kind of shape to beat Devin Haney? The belt's irrelevant. We're in a post-world title era now. It was, can we get him in a position to beat Devin Haney? And I believe they got Ryan Garcia down to the lowest weight they could without sacrificing any power. And I think that's 143.2 pounds. I believe at that point, Ryan said, I feel good, I feel powerful, I feel strong, and that's what they did. Now, I don't necessarily agree with that, but I've got to provide some context so people understand this. You can have two boxers, and I'm speaking from experience here. You can have two boxers. One weighs in at 49 kilos. One weighs in at 51. Okay? That fight goes ahead. Okay? That's a 4.5 pound difference. That fight goes ahead. No one even flinches. It's all right. Cool. Let's get at it. Okay? 4.5 pound difference. But if you look at it as a proportion of their body weight, now it gets problematic. Yeah? Because that's a huge chunk of their body weight. But in the AMS, it goes ahead. Why? Because deep down, the extra weight, it's not the extra weight. Do you know what it is? It's the lack of depletion of key things like your acetylcholine and your sodium levels and your magnesium levels. And those things don't weigh a lot. What weighs a lot is the fluid that they're kept in. That's the real difference. Can you keep enough of your micronutrients that your neuromuscular pathways are efficient? That's really what professional sport's about. What's the lowest weight I can get to where all of those things work well? So, yes, we should talk about the extra weight. No, I don't think the outcome would have changed that much, because those two guys, like I said, man, this is about so much more, man, when two people know each other and have grown up together. So the post-fight's been interesting, right? Because in the ring, Garcia said he'd give the rematch. Outside the ring, he says no rematch. And people say that's not fair. And I say, well, they never gave Loma a rematch. And Loma wanted a rematch. You know what I mean? Like, this is just boxing. I like it when guys move on, do other stuff, and then revisit their fight when it's appropriate. So I don't know if they need to run it back next. The bean counters and the money men will probably say they need to. I'd rather it didn't. I'd rather went and fought other people and then met up at 147. And, you know, the quicker the better, to be honest. Let Tank, Frank Martin, all those boys have 140. These bigger guys get to 147 and just get after it. Keep it simple. What else has happened? Like, you've just seen Ryan enjoying life post-fight, haven't you? Smoking the cigars, partying, having a good time. I wish we had more of that in boxing. Like I said, the monastic thing, like, let's put it to bed for a bit, man. Let's have guys and girls enjoying themselves and having fun. Now, that's really what... Because that's... Why else would you get into sport? Apart from to have fun. You know, I've seen people criticizing Jack Grealish when he celebrates a title win. I'm like, well, you go win a title and tell me how you'd celebrate. Do you know what I mean? But no, in summary, great night for boxing. Whatever those two go on to do, they've earned, because they've given the fans what they asked for. Didn't take 5 years to make the fight. When the fight was made, it was made. If we get more of this, boxing will only get better. So I credit both guys, got a lot of time for them. I'm hoping this is the end of the Bill Haney show. I think this is the point where he's got to fall back now and let his son do his thing. I got bored of seeing and hearing Bill Haney. He was in full plastic tough guy mode, which I can't respect. You know, it's like you're a bit too old to be doing that. But before I go, I just want to shout out Horsham Boxing Club, because I had to go down there for a show. Was nice, man. Like, they were really hospitable, lovely club, really, really friendly. So kudos to Horsham ABC for looking after us. It was always good to see some of the old faces. You know, Paul Simmons at Ellsfield, top guy. And I think I tweeted this last night. I did a corner with him because the Ellsfield Gorilla had better things to do with his time. So once again, you know, I've had to do his work for him, and I feel I did a better job. Now, I think every coach should corner with someone that they don't normally work with, because I love watching how different people do things. So I'm sat next to Paul Simmons, listening to him and going, what connection has he got with his fighter? And just listening to his instructions. And I'm like, this guy's so efficient in his instructions. I'm like, is this what Sid's teaching them at Ellsfield? And it was like, for me, it was an eye-opener. So I had to, as soon as we were done doing the corner, I just went in there, just made a little note, like, okay, this is what he does well. Da, 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 da. Do I need to incorporate any of this? I just love watching other coaches operate, because there's always something I can learn. And it was a pleasure doing the corner with Paul Simmons. Got a lovely young kid called Danny, who, when his time comes, he'll be a problem. Because got a real nasty streak to him, but he's just got to grow into the sport. But no, so I had a lot of time. Good to see them. Always good to be around the ones with people, like Karen, Nathan, and the whole gang. Proud of my guys, Harry and John the Baptist, man. So proud of them, because they've made so much progress in a short space of time. I think there was a period where everyone was just floating around, and it wasn't really real to them. And I've sort of seen since the new year just a snapping in of the mentality now, where there's a real desire to improve. And that's given me hope. Now I'm like, actually, maybe we can cause a lot of havoc here. So no, love that show. Shouts out to Odyssey as well. So there's a club called Odyssey Boxing Club. Top guys there. They really showed us love. So, you know, I'm always respectful and appreciative of that. They got these two brothers. And I don't know if these guys will box, but they're the Hopkins brothers. So one's called Lewis, and I think the other one's called William, right? So Lewis and William Hopkins. I don't even know where Odyssey Boxing Club is, I'm not going to lie. But you see these two kids, they had the Elvis Costello glasses when they walked in. I saw them. I was like, these kids can't box. Two brothers, twins, two stoppages. Just smacking people. Just weighing people in. Just weighing them in. And I was just like, wow. If I see these guys on any list, mate, we're not. I don't know if I need that smoke this year. Maybe next year. But now, really, really good bunch of guys. All those clubs are good. St. Mary's, good to see them again. Borden, good to see them. Ramsgate, wow. Ramsgate have this young girl called Mia Sanders. Like, I don't know how old Mia Sanders is. She's too young to be dropping people the way she was dropping them. She could be a problem. I'd put her in that category where I say she could make Team GB when she's older. She's, yeah. She's got potential. And I had to tell her, like, listen, do not quit boxing now, man. Like, this is your sport. Whatever it is that you're doing, don't, no girl bands, no influencer career. You're a boxer, man. It's in you. Yeah, because you got that thing that you can't teach. Yeah, so little Mia Sanders is what it's all about. Now, who else was there that we need to show love to? Shout out to Rebels Boxing. Kind of a double jab reunion, although I think they joined way after I left. But, no, shouts out to Double Jab for still having my picture on the wall, man. Like, I will never forget those 4 years and what we achieved. Shouts out to Amigos as well. Bogner, Woking, Pearly. Who else was there yesterday that we got to show love to? You know, people that we had a just good crack with, to be honest. Gosport ABC were good. Ringcraft. I mean, it was good to be around those sorts of folks, man. So, good standard of boxing. Good to see the South Coast is doing its thing as well. Because, you know, when you're in London, you're in a bit of a bubble. It's always nice to be out and just have a little look. It's a long day, though. You know, you're having to schlep down to Horsham and back. Just a long old day. But, yeah, when you get down to those sort of situations and you just see how enthusiastic everyone was, it looked, the venue looked full, everything looked good, lovely kids, loads of traveller kids really buzzing about boxing. So we had a good chat with them, just said, listen, at some point you guys are going to discover, I mean, life and women and stuff. I'm like, at that point there, get a gym membership, keep lifting, keep training like animals, man, because they've got the talent, but I think sometimes they sort of rely too much on skill. I'm like, no, do all the runs, do the strength and conditioning stuff, just become monsters, man, because they've got the talent. So now, it was a good day all around, thoroughly enjoyed it, and listen, that might be my boxing for a while, man. I just need a few days away from it. That's why I'm recording today, because I don't want to, yeah, let me have a few days away from it, man. But on that note, let me say, listen, enjoy your day. Weather looks fantastic. So if you manage to get out and enjoy it. Spend time with family and friends. And let me just shout out Sensei Daz. I don't think he wants me shouting his name out. You know what I mean? So he passed me a job opportunity, which looks good. So I might actually apply for that. But you know what? Like, when people kind of think of you in that sense and go, listen, mate, this might work in your kind of AI tech transformation world. Always appreciate it, man. So thank you for that. And on that note, I'll say take care, guys.